This sounds like a very similar title, but it's a completely different study. This is Parental Concerns About Vaccines and Choice of Alternative Schedules, also joint work with my colleague Elena Barras. And we still have no relationships to disclose. I think I failed to put that slide in. Same motivation slide. If you were here for the last session, you've seen this before. Basic story, there's a prevalence and growing trend towards safety concerns about vaccines, especially the childhood schedule, and requests for alternative schedules to providers. Our research questions here were, we're actually now working within one pediatric practice. It's a pediatric practice that has quite a lot of hesitancy and refusal in alternative schedules, and we wanted to use that sort of that denominator to ask which specific vaccine concerns are associated with specific alternative schedule requests. So what is that association? And also, just in terms of epidemiological risks, do different concerns lead to more uncovered child months? So more delay or more refusal? If you think sort of epidemiologically about a practice, how many uncovered months do we have that are associated with the different vaccine concerns? So this is a solo pediatric practice in Philadelphia. It's been open about 2 years. The provider is very pro-vaccine, but also very accommodating of parental hesitancy and requests for alternative schedules. And as those of you who work in this area know, word of mouth is very powerful here. And so she's actually attracted from a wide radius in Philadelphia, attracted parents who are looking for that kind of accommodation and that kind of tolerance. So we've done a medical records analysis from the first about 170 patients to join her practice. What this provider does at the one-month visit, which is actually not a visit at which any vaccines need to be delivered, is she has kind of the vaccine conversation with the parents. And it can be as easy as, you know, we like to vaccinate, what's the plan? And the parent might say, great, that whatever the plan is, I'm doing. Or it might be a 45-minute conversation about all the concerns the parent has, what schedule they're going to do, mapping out the schedule, yada, yada, yada. What's nice about the medical record system in this practice is she actually captures those concerns. So we have a list of about 10 or 12 different concerns the parent might have. Those get ticked off in the medical record. And then whatever the plan is that the parent's going to do, that's also captured as well. So we're looking here at the concerns the parent articulates at that one-month visit. It may be a later than one-month visit if the child joins the practice at a later age. And we're comparing that to the planned immunization schedule. I want to emphasize that. We're looking at what the parent says the child is going to do in terms of following the schedule. So in terms of results, let me just show you the concerns that the parents articulate. Again, not a huge sample. This is about 170, and not a representative sample of, you know, Philadelphia parents or anything like that. This is a high hesitancy, high alternative schedule practice. But among that group, we do see about two-thirds articulating no concerns. Great, let's vaccinate. Sounds fine. Among those who do articulate concerns, the most common one is not the autism one. It's the, you know, the vaccines are going to overtax the immune system. We usually hear this expressed as it's just too many shots, and just being concerned about that kind of overload on the kid's immune system. Then the autism concern next, and then the next one goes to the gentleman's earlier comment, just, you know, these diseases aren't rare or severe, and I'm not that worried about vaccinating against them. There's the preference for natural immunity. I'd rather have the child get this disease naturally. And that's, yeah, I know. And then the specific concerns about vaccine ingredients, aluminum and mercury, and we're getting to small sample sizes or small cell sizes here. No one articulating the concern that the vaccines are ineffective, which is probably good. And then a host of other concerns that we sort of couldn't capture in unique categories. In terms of the schedules that they're choosing, again, far and away, the modal schedule is the ACIP recommended schedule, which is great to see. The next most common schedule is, you know, we're going to get everything done eventually, but we're going to space them out. We're only going to do one or two shots per visit. We're going to come back every 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. But by age two or by kindergarten entry or whatever, this child is likely to be up to date on all vaccines. 7% in this practice are declining all vaccines. Another common category we see, and I think there's probably a whole other research agenda around this issue, is declining Hep B in the hospital. I think telling the parent of a one-day-old baby that the child needs to be vaccinated against a sexually transmitted disease, although it makes total sense from a population health standpoint, prejudices a lot of parents against the whole schedule. And they can come to that first well-baby visit saying, like, forget it, they wanted a vaccine to make it in the hospital, you know, and really can, I think, bias parents against the entire schedule. And we do see that in this group. We see a cluster who are not doing Hep B, they're doing everything else, maybe according to the ACIP schedule. We have a sort of no vaccine until a specified age category, so they're going to do them all, but they're not going to start until 6 months, 2 years, daycare entry, whatever. A lot of that that we hear more qualitatively is, you know, wanting to make sure the kid's not autistic, basically, like waiting until after we would assume autistic symptoms would arise, and waiting until after that point. A couple folks in our sample specifically asking for Dr. Sears my name, which is, you know, again, kind of a weird alternative schedule that's basically geared towards avoiding aluminum and avoiding diseases Dr. Sears doesn't think are that bad. And then a lot of folks leaving that 1 month visit having not decided yet. So either not telling the doctor what their plans are or saying we haven't made up our mind, we'll come back at the, you know, at the 2 month visit and let you know. So our analysis was basically to just look for statistical correlations between the concern that you articulate and the schedule that you chose. And I'll just show you a couple examples of these. So here a red line, a red arrow, indicates a statistically significant negative association between the concern and the schedule, and green shows a positive one. And this makes perfect sense. On the first one, very intuitive result. Those with no concerns are much more likely to choose the ASIP schedule and much less likely to choose a spaced schedule, decline all vaccines, have avoided Hep B, or to not have an idea yet of their vaccine plan. In terms of the most prevalent concern, meaning vaccines overtaxing the immune system, less likely to choose ACIP, more likely to space, again, the very intuitive results, or to not have a plan yet. If you're concerned about autism, you're less likely to do ACIP, more likely to decline all vaccines, or to wait, again, as I said earlier, to wait for a specified age. And I'll just show you one more for the aluminum one, less likely to choose ACIP, more likely to space, or specifically to ask for Dr. Sears, as that is one of his kind of bugaboos in his schedule, is avoiding aluminum. The other thing we wanted to do, as I said up front, was sort of look at uncovered months, sort of epidemiological risk that's associated with specific concerns. And we've done this through a survival analysis framework. And if you're not familiar with Kaplan-Meier survival curves, they just show us time to an event. So here, this would be the Kaplan-Meier curve if every kid got their first DTaP dose, for example, exactly at 2 months. So we would see 100% uncoverage for the first 2 months of life, and then boom, at 2 months, every kid would have their first DTaP dose. So that would be an ideal. In this practice, this is what the Kaplan-Meier survival curve looks like for planned time to the first DTaP dose, because remember, we're looking at planned schedules here, not actual. About 12% are going to get that DTaP dose on time, and then you'll see a few more parents picking up that dose, and by 12 months, still about 10% will not, again, on a planned schedule basis, will not have received that DTaP dose yet. So what we wanted to do was compare that Kaplan-Meier curve for parents with different concerns and see which one is leading to more uncoverage, and we can calculate uncoverage just as the area under the curve to the right of the date of the first planned dose. So in this practice, on average, all the kids in the denominator are going to be about 2 weeks late with that first DTaP dose. Now, obviously, some kids are going to get it on time, some kids are never going to get it, but the average uncovered months for this practice was 0.53. And here I'm just going to show you one example. This is, again, planned time to the first DTaP dose. On the left-hand side, I'm showing you parents who do and do not have the concern that multiple vaccines are going to overtax the immune system. So the solid line is the Kaplan-Meier curve for those who don't have that concern, and the dashed line is for those who do have the concern. And here you see that delay pattern. Each one of these little steps is a parent picking up that first DTaP dose later than the recommended time of 2 months. About half of the group of parents in that group are not going to do it on time, but by the 12 months, the difference between those who do and don't have that concern is much narrower. In contrast, if your concern is mercury in the vaccine, about half of you are going to get it on time, and half of you by 12 months aren't going to have it. There's no step pattern there. It's just still, we're not interested in mercury. We're not planning to do DTaP, even though there's no mercury in DTaP. So this, I mean, we've done this for every concern articulated in the medical record and every dose of every vaccine that's planned up to age one, sort of developing a metric for that area under the curve that tells us at a practice level what's the risk of uncoverage associated with different concerns. So our next step is an obvious one. We've done this on planned vaccine schedule. We're now collecting the records on what the parent has actually done. So that allows us to do two things. We can see how the concerns are associated with the actual vaccine time, and we can see how the planned schedule correlates with the actual schedule. Do parents stick with the plans that they make? We're also doing some interesting natural experiments looking at changes in the provider's counseling script and also changes in the form that she uses to make that vaccine plan. She's kind of refined her approach given the volume of hesitancy and alternative schedule requests she gets. And I'll just show you that because it's kind of neat. Early on, she realized that there was such detailed, fine-grained discussions around the schedule for the first year that she was using this form to have that conversation at the one-month visit with parents. Every vaccine, the ACIP age, which ones could be combined, the age and then the age and the month and year that that child was going to receive that vaccine. But she's working with a behavioral economist as a researcher who says this is just inviting problems, right? I mean, you present this many options to a parent, and of course they're going to choose some very fine-grained, detailed schedule. So I said, well, what if we just use this form? The conversation was only getting up to age one anyway, because she wasn't having time to even go past a year. And this just shows the visits across the top, the different shots or antigens down the side. We do the smiley face. We know, again, from other studies that that's a very powerful reinforcer, that this is sort of the right thing to do. There is space here. At first, we were going to put a line under each of the smiley faces where you could write in a different date. And I said, no, let's just go with the default here. If the parent wants to tweak the schedule, there's room to do that. She says, anecdotally, this has been very effective. So what we did is we put this form in one exam room and this form in the other exam room for several months until she said, I just can't stand this form anymore. To stop using it. But we'll be able to compare if there's any difference in choices schedules based on that form. Oops, wrong way. This study was also funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Health and Society Scholars Program at the University of Pennsylvania, and happy to take questions. Yes? So the question is, if the plan, if the schedule the parent is making comes after a long conversation with the provider, where the provider has an opportunity to say, you know, there's no mercury in any of these vaccines, why are they still choosing to delay? There may be other reasons. For example, with DTaP, there may be another reason that they're choosing not to do DTaP or not to do it on time that may be correlated with also having the concern about mercury. So we capture multiple concerns. Some parents have 8 concerns. Some people have 2. So there's other correlations there. Or people are not, you know, using their analytic reasoning system when they're making that choice. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of interesting. Of course, media makes an impact.
Yes, it does.
Positively and negatively.
Yes.
Okay, local media says, her tussles outbreak. You get a bump.
That would be a great thing to study. So the question was, are parents influenced by especially local outbreaks of disease risk? I would love someone, maybe someone in this room, to do that analysis in San Diego County after the 2008 measles outbreak. I'm really curious to see if there was a bump up in unvaccinated kids, if parents getting them caught up. You know, we haven't had enough outbreaks like that locally in Philly to see that, but I think that's very important research to do. I'm curious whether even just the message in a one-to-one situation with a provider, if it's more effective for a provider to say, you know, we had a kid at CHOP, we had a kid at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia last year die of whatever, rotavirus, versus did you know that, you know, 9,000 children a year die of rotavirus and many of them are unvaccinated, or even did you know, hundreds of thousands of children around the world die of rotavirus. If it's more, again, behavioral economics would tell us it's more forceful if that provider can say, I saw a child die of this disease. The other message we know is very effective for providers is, I fully vaccinate my own child and I would not want anything different or less for your child. Other questions? Yeah? They are, that's a good question. We considered them to, that child would not be vaccinated by 12 months, and that's a fairly sizable chunk, so that's a good point. These may be underestimates or overestimates of uncoverage or underestimates of coverage. Yeah. I'll just see if anyone else, since you've had a question already. Anyone else? Okay, yeah, go for it. No, you're on. Yep.
There's vaccines over vaccines. you know, these two vaccines would interact adversely or something, something sort of like that. But they just had a feeling we were getting too many vaccines.
It's just too, so the question is what's behind that overtaxing the immune system? Yeah, the feeling like it's just too many shots. Now, I think that maybe combined with the parent just not wanting to see needle after needle go into their child at one visit, although we know from the research that in any given episode, the first shot is pretty traumatic for the kid, and multiple shots that day are, you know, marginally much less traumatic. So spacing them out is actually a bigger burden on the kid in terms of trauma than getting them all done with one day. But the other specific concern we hear is, if there's a problem afterwards, I want to know exactly which vaccine it was that's causing that problem. So if I only do one a day, one per visit, and there's a problem, I know what was that specific shot. It's actually very rational. Very rational. One more question. Zero more questions. Yes, one more question. Yeah, so the question is, are we going back and looking at what the parent actually did? And the answer is yes. We are collecting those data now, comparing the plan that the parent made versus the actual immunizations that the provider administered in the office. And we'll try to follow those kids up to about age, we can do it about up to age 3 now for some of our sample, and it'll take a little longer to accumulate for the rest of that sample.